Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Tuesday, December the 5th, 2017. And this is our second podcast of the day, the afternoon podcast. Welcome to it. If you're listening live, we're glad to have you. If you're listening after the fact, well, we're glad to have you too. If you're listening on Pure End, we're glad to have you as well. In fact, that's what's one of the things that's really cool, Wendy, is they're picking us up now on PRN. So our afternoon shows are broadcasting on PRN at 9 a.m. the next morning.
That is great. I love to get the message of positivity out in every place we possibly
can. And we're doing it quickly, right out of the gate. I mean, we just started, what, 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden, boom, we've expanded our reach that quickly. You can't argue with that. That's pretty darn good.
It's pretty darn awesome.
So let's see, wins. How are we doing on wins? I'll tell you something that's been going on. Well, you know one of the things that's been going on. You remember yesterday I had the ISP guy here because occasionally the program had little drops where we lose signal for like 3 or 4 seconds. And
sure.
he thought he had it, he had the problem licked. So we did the show yesterday, and sure enough, we had 2 or 3 drops during the show. So I said, well, I guess that problem isn't licked, but I have been giving a little more attention to it. And while I don't have it solved yet, I've been trying a few things, and I'm making some notes, and I'll be watching some meters and computer performance graphs and so forth during the show to see what's going on, see if I can spot a trend somewhere. But I also want to talk about a more positive side of it. And this is not something I normally would have thought of as a positive thing, particularly because of my own libertarian political perspective. But I have to say, this is one instance where I'm glad for regulation.
Oh!
And the reason I say that is, yeah, I mean, we all have had the experience of dealing with some major provider. In this case, it's an ISP or a cable provider. And you have to call the call center, right, if something goes wrong. Your TV is out or the internet doesn't work or the email isn't working or whatever it is. You have to call the call center, and you have to deal with, you know, the queues, and you have to wait for the right person to come along, and then they talk to you, and, oh, they're not the right one. They have to send you to the next person and all that kind of craziness, right?
Yeah, been there, did that.
Well, I've been doing it quite a few times with this issue over the course of about a year and a half, so, you know, I'm very well attuned to it. And an interesting thing happened about a week ago. Actually, I guess it's about 5 days ago. 5 days ago, I decided I was going to contact the state about it. Because, of course, here in Connecticut is the Department of Utilities Commission. That's the commission that regulates public utilities like telephone companies, cable companies, and so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, I'll contact them and just file a complaint because this has been kind of going on for quite some time. And so I did. I sent a message. And then 2 days later, on Friday, I decided to contact Frontier directly, which is what led to the visit on Monday. Well, what I didn't realize at the time and what I found out today is that that was actually heavily motivated by me contacting the state, because the state contacted them, and all of a sudden, oh, we're on fire here. We got to deal with this, this state complaint. And I said, oh, well, that's really interesting.
I thought, yeah, because when you told the story before, and probably your thoughts on it, was it, you had called and kind of said, hey, if this doesn't get fixed, I'm going to call the state. And you thought it was because of that they jumped.
And it was. I just had kind of reversed the sequence because I remembered, yeah, the sequence was I contacted the state first, and I kind of assumed it was going to take a while. I mean, we know how long the state takes to do things, right? So I figured I probably wouldn't hear anything for a month. You know? So it was an after-the-fact thing that I figured, oh, I'll try calling the company one more time just in case. Well, not only did that guy come out yesterday, and the problem still needs to be resolved, but today I got an out-of-the-blue call from somebody at Frontier, the company, and they said, well, I understand that we were able to resolve the problem yesterday. I said, well, it's not quite resolved yet. I'm still testing a few things here, and I'm still seeing some problems. And they said, well, did the technician give you his phone number? And I said, yeah, actually he did, which I thought was really cool. I mean, he said, basically, call me directly. Don't go through the call center. And I said, well, I like that a lot. And this person said, well, I'm going to give you my number, too. So if you can't get him, you can reach me. And I'm thinking,
no way.
Wow. When was the last time a major provider called you up, and it was a particular person in the company who said, I'm going to take responsibility for what's going on with your service, and if there's any problem,
call me directly. Wait. You just said my favorite words.
What's that?
I'm going to take responsibility.
Yes.
That's so cool, because from my experience, That happens very seldom. So already this is a win. Keep going.
It's a magnificent win. It's one of those law of attraction, out of the blue, serendipitous wins that you say, what? What happened here? But it's all led me to believe, wow, I guess they really do pay attention to the state regulators. So in this case, woohoo. I'm glad that it's working. But I never knew that you could get this kind of result that way. So,
well, and here, we can do this right now. You and me, the power of multiplication, because it's not just one.
Right.
But you, me, and everybody who's listening to this now and in the future, set the intention that we get this resolved so that our show has zero drops in what we're saying.
I never thought about crowdsourcing that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I believe in the power of intention, and I believe when you add people to it, the power becomes so great, it will blow our mind. I think this is going to be an ongoing thing until we see it absolutely come to the full resolution that we're looking for.
I love it. So if yeah. you're willing to help us out and you're listening, just put out there in your thoughts that you want to hear a radio show where everything comes through crystal clear and there's never any kind of blips or staticky sounds or anything like that. It's just a nice clean signal from beginning to end of show. And if you do that, you'll be helping us and you'll be helping you. How's that?
Yep, done. It's done.
I love it. So there's a big win. How about you? You got any good wins going on?
Yes. Well, yesterday we talked about my book launch.
That's right.
And
how's
so
that going?
Today I want to talk about the results.
Okay.
Which really blow my mind, because at the end of the show I said, as soon as I hang up, I'm going to run to my computer and see if there's been any updates. And there was.
Yeah.
We had reached number one internationally.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know what category. But you know what? It doesn't matter to
cares?
Me. Because I can say with absolute truth that my book reach number one internationally.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing this for, because I wanted to be a number one bestseller.
Wow.
And I know we were also number one in the U.S. Again, what category? Don't know. And we were U.S., I think, or maybe we're number two in Canada. But that was just yesterday. And so the stats continue. And when I was talking to my publisher today, she was saying, you know, really, like the first week of the launch, she monitors it continually.
Mm-hmm.
So she said she's going to put out the summary of all the stats, like, in a week or so.
Right.
But I knew that I went to sleep last night knowing that I was a number one best-selling author.
Now, how did that affect your sleep?
Well, I think it let me sleep like a baby. I slept so soundly. But I will tell you that because of all the marketing that I was doing yesterday while working the job, doing this show, and all sorts of things, cranking energy like you wouldn't believe. I think my adrenal glands were on overdrive. And by the time it was all said and done, I was staring at the wall going, I'm tired. I'm done.
Yeah, I think
and
we've all been
like,
there.
I'm a late night person, but I literally put myself in bed at 9 o'clock and I set my TV sleep timer for an hour, and I was sound asleep long before the timer went off, which is why I woke up around 3, and my brain just was really active. And so here's the joy of working from home. I went, well, if I'm going to be awake thinking about my job, I'm just going to get up and go do my job. Because there was some stuff I didn't get done yesterday that I really wanted to, but I was just too brain dead to do it. And so I worked from 4:15 until 7 in the morning, and my day job doesn't really start until 8. So I went back to sleep for a little while and then got back up and then started work.
Yeah, that is a definite advantage, no doubt, to being a self-employed person, because you can do stuff like that. It's not like when you're going to
Absolutely.
A job somewhere and you got to do the half-hour to two-hour commute or whatever it is. And then, you know,
but I'll tell you, as
so
I was
forth.
Putting myself to bed, I was thinking, I am a number one bestseller.
That's got to put a smile on your face.
It puts a smile on my face, but, you know, it leads me to kind of another point that I've learned within Law of Attraction.
What's that?
And I started to hit on this in one other show, and then we kind of rabbit trailed, and I didn't get to say this.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we've heard the joy is in the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard Abraham talk on that quite a lot lately, about it's not really the end result that gives you the greatest bang for your buck, it's the joy along the way. And I have to say that once I hit that, ta-da, I'm a number one best-selling author, I went, you know, I'm thrilled for that, but it's a little anticlimactic. Because all the little touch points that from the day the publisher reached out to me and said, would you like to participate in this book, until all of the excitement yesterday of doing the marketing, that was the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many exciting points along the way. Even the anticipation of becoming a number one best-selling author, that was something I milked for a year. And so, me at the end of the show yesterday, so how does it feel being an author? I'm like, huh, not any different. And that's why when I was thinking on it on my own last night, I went, I'm getting really, the joy is in the journey, because once you've reached the destination, the journey kind of is over. I mean, you can create new journeys, but that particular journey has now come to its destination, and it's done.
It's almost like your mind says, so what's next?
That's exactly it. And I think that's what we're meant for. We're not meant to ever have any sense of endedness in our life.
Mm-hmm.
But this journey has come to an end, and so now I really have a vacuum in my life. I'm ready for the next journey.
Well, actually, it isn't completely. It isn't completely at an end, is it? Because you still have those complete stats to come. So you've got one more thing to look forward to. And you know that it's going to be good news.
I know that it's what?
Good news. That it's going to be positive. It's
absolutely
going to be reinforcing. It's going to make you feel good.
And then, of course, there's another little piece, which if I haven't put this on my website yet, where, you know, I'll put the seal that says number one Amazon bestseller. It's like, ooh, that'll be an exciting thing where I can see that, you know, in print. And then every time I go to my website, I'll see it. So it'll be a wonderful reminder of how yesterday I said the law of attraction never forgets.
That's right.
Because I really put it into my vortex years ago that I wanted to write, I wanted to author books, and I wanted to be a bestseller. And the law of attraction remembered and arranged the cooperative components in order to bring that about in my life.
Interesting thing, by the way, my new Tuesday, Wednesday co-host, Cindy Chavez, was listening to our show yesterday, and she mentioned to me during our broadcast this morning that she's done something similar to what you've done. She was also involved in a book launch where there were multiple authors and the same kind of thing where everybody's doing the push and so forth. And she was just as excited as you were about what was happening to you because she knows what that's like to go through that.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, you know, after I was invited to be a part of this book, all of a sudden, you know, once you start focusing on something, law of attraction just has that thing show up a lot.
Yeah.
And I was getting other offers from other people. People were coming to me from LinkedIn and kind of like cold calling, and I was getting cold emails of people wanting me to be a part of co-authored books. And
wow.
I didn't feel the yes was in me for those, because
right.
I always go inside and ask my inner being, is this going to be what I'm looking for, and
mm-hmm.
you know, toward the best end for me, and I was getting no, so I passed on them. But I started to do a little bit of research around that topic, and I realized, I don't know if it's the new trend, but it's an awesome way for budding business people to get their name out there and get a credential by being an author in a book. And I got to tell you, from my perspective, the fact that the publisher handled all the details and all I had to do was write my chapter, provide it, she edited it, you know, we went back and forth to make sure it was proofed correctly. I provided my bio and a photograph. That was it for me. That was it for my part. And I'm like, I like how easy it was.
Well, you also did a little help with the marketing at the last minute on Monday night or
true.
Whatever, Sunday night. But yes, yes.
That's very true. But I know, like, if you were to compare or contrast my book experience with yours, I would imagine that you had to do many more. I
had to do a lot more and with a lot less gratification because I was trying to do it all myself, which is the one way I recommend not doing it. It's so much better to do it with somebody else's help. I mean, I did have some help in terms of the proofreading and the editing and so forth, especially for my sister. And once more, a heads up and a thank you and a tip of the cap to PJ. But yeah, if it weren't for that, I pretty much would have been on my own, and I'm not even sure I could have finished the project, to be honest. But having so many people involved like that one, I mean, I was looking at your editor on Amazon, and she's got a lot of books that she's done this way. I mean, I didn't take an exact count. She's written a couple herself, but she has, I don't know, maybe a dozen of them that are in this kind of category of multiple authors contributing to it. She's got quite a model going on there.
Yeah, and like my friend, she's done two books with her. They both went number one. Another like incredible friend of mine, she's gone number one with one of those books. So, and that's actually how I became Facebook friends with the editor.
Mm.
Because my friends are Facebook friends with the editor, and I had commented on one of my friends' posts in Facebook, and Erica Glessing, who's the publisher, happened to comment too, and that's where she saw my name.
Interesting.
Yeah. Any place it needs to go in order to line things up.
So here's an example of how we can actually track what the law of attraction was doing. That's not something that we usually get the opportunity to see, but in this case, we can actually see where all the connections were being made. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good.
So anyway, that's my big win for the day. And like you said, it's going to continue because I still get to receive the summary. I still get to add, you know, to my website. So I love to milk things. So as every time I think about it, it's like right now I see the gold seal in my head of number one bestseller, Amazon. Like, yes. That works for me since I'm visual. I can pull up that image anytime I want.
It's funny because I've never really been one who wanted credentials. I've always kind of eschewed them. I've said, no, not really for me, thank you. And I had a number of opportunities to get them, but I didn't really want them. There was one time I actually got a small credential for something I was doing with marketing. It was an AdWords credential. And I got it just because there was a perception that you need to have it in order for clients to take you seriously. But even then,
well, that's the reason behind this for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what usually the reason is. But I also have certain prejudices against credentials that we won't get into. But the point is, I don't have a really great feeling about them. So as a result, I've always stayed away from them. And I've never been attracted to them. I've never been drawn into them. So it's never really been something I wanted to pursue. It never really occurred to me that you could actually pursue a credential just because it would feel good to have the credential.
Yeah.
A lot of people do that, I'm sure, but still.
I've got a ton of credentials, but I don't make a big deal out of them because most of them I did for me.
Oh,
and
okay.
It just feels good that I'm the one who did the work. Not even, and if I didn't give a credential, it still wouldn't have mattered.
Because you enjoyed what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, to me, is the reason to do it. But now I can at least appreciate and see the other side of it, that, yeah, getting the credential is kind of like, you know, it's good reinforcement. It's basically saying, hey, I did something good here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Well, I grew up thinking that credentials were really important.
Ah.
And I went to, and here's how, for me, in the negative, and then it eventually worked in the positive. But I went to a two-year program because I wanted to study fashion design and pattern making and couture sewing skills.
Ah.
Because that was my hobby growing up, mm-hmm. and my intention in going to college to learn that was so that I could really learn it, but it wasn't my intention to make that a career.
Ah, okay.
Even though eventually those skills did help me when I was a costume designer, most obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the school itself was a two-year program. It was way more hours than my friends who were going to four-year university. Because not only was it 6 hours of school time Monday through Friday, but I worked almost every evening and every weekend just to do all the work that had to be done in order to keep up with all the courses. And so the one thing about the school that was disappointing to me is that I would not graduate with a degree because it was not a degreed program. You would simply get a diploma.
Uh-huh.
And I had a whole bunch of issues around that because I had a high school guidance counselor that highly recommended I did not attend that school.
Really?
Yes, and his reason was because the entrance criteria was that you were at least a C average student in high school. And he said, Wendy, you're a straight A student. You're graduated salutatorian. He goes, I think you're going to be with people who are less than who you are, which I thought was a really crass thing for a counselor to tell me. But I said, but I don't think this has anything to do with academic grades. This is more like technical, hands-on artistry. And he just didn't see it that way.
Hmm.
So it was kind of like I had resistance anyway going into it because it's like, I'll show you. And I even said to him, I said, I plan on going to this school. And he goes, okay, well, when you're done, you come back and tell me that it was everything you wanted to be. So it was like he threw down the gauntlet. Challenge on.
Did. Yeah.
So I did my 2 years. And, this is what I wanted to jump in. By the second year, they did change the rulings or the regulations, policies of the school, and they were going to offer a degree. And I was so torn because I had to take business English, business math, and I think business psychology. And I'd have to pay an extra $500 for each course. And it wasn't so much the money, but the amount of time that I would have to put in on top of the schedule I told you I already had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there was no more time left in my life. I mean, I literally worked every weekend and every night nonstop because there was so much homework and so many sewing projects, etc. And it almost broke my heart, but I made the decision not to get the degree, even though I desperately wanted a degree.
That's interesting. Why did you decide that?
Because I felt the real reason I went to the school was to learn, and I was not willing to, not take in the fullness of the skills by having to take out some of the time that I spent on that to do business math and psychology, which to me, I was already in honors English in high school, honors everything.
Mm.
I graduated at the top of my class, mm-hmm. and I thought, even if these are, quote, college-level courses, I'm like, they're not even going to be challenging to me, and I'm going to be bored on my mind. And so I looked at the overall circumstances, and I took the degree piece out of it, and I went, if the degree was not even an issue, I wouldn't do it. And so I went, I think for the betterment of who I am and for me to really get out of this program what I want to get out of it, I'm going to spend my time focusing on the pattern making and the sewing skills and all the things that I really went there to learn.
I applaud you for that, especially given how much you love credentials and how important you thought they were when you were growing up. I applaud you for that. That was a tough decision for you to come to, but you focused on what you loved. That was the best part.
I do know that I made the best decision for me, but it's really interesting how that decision has played so heavily in my life. And I will tell you, I moved after college, and so I was now not in the same state where I had gone to high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I went back for my 10-year reunion, and I went for a week, and that guidance counselor was still there.
Ah.
So I set up an appointment to see him, to tell him, da-da, I did it. It was fabulous, and it was hard. It was really hard because it was not academic. And he did not even remember who I was.
Oh, no.
He didn't remember the conversation. And I was just one of many students that he gave guidance to. And
right.
I thought, but he profoundly affected how I went into my college experience with so much vim and vigor and determination that I was going to do this in a way that would make such a difference for me, that I'd come out of it with such great skills, that I think he had a very valuable part in my college education. And it really, after a while, I realized it didn't matter that he didn't remember me at all.
Good. Yeah.
I got from him exactly what I needed.
Exactly. That's the most important part anyway.
Exactly. So anyway, I did that. And then, a couple of years later, I went to college again, and I went to Bible college.
Uh-huh.
And once again, there was going to be no degree. It would just be a diploma.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm like, I can't believe it. I mean, I spend more time in school than anybody I know, and I get no degrees out of it. And it was I don't know. There's something that in the cosmic universe, it was like the universe was saying the degree really doesn't matter. And so I struggled for years over that, and I really am totally over it, because what I've really come to recognize is, what's the end result? And I think you talked about it one day last week, which had to do with, I can't remember, was it your wife's story or your story, but doing something because you got the right result. It was your wife. That there were certain things that she learned in school about certain models of psychology, but she came up with her own way, and she was getting better results than what she learned through her educational process.
Oh, yeah, very much.
And I had gone to a program maybe about 5 years ago or so, and I remember the teacher that I was learning, it was like an NLP advanced course. And I remember him saying that when he was doing this one course where there was credentials that went with it, this one person was doing like their testing at the end where they had to do this process on somebody in the classroom, and then he judged it, and that was a big part of the grade. And when it was over, you know, the person who's being graded said, well, how did I do? And he said, well, actually, you did it totally backwards.
So, okay.
You know, this student is like, oh, crap.
Yeah, right.
And so then the teacher looked at the client, the one playing the role-playing as the client, and said, but it was role-playing, but it was working on a real-life coaching issue. And the client said, I totally got the result. I feel so different. And the teacher said, you get an A, because it really doesn't matter if you do it according to the way the process was or the way you were trained.
Right.
Bottom line in coaching is you're out to get the client the result that they have come to you for, period, end of report.
Very good. That's a teacher who understands what is really important in learning. That I give that teacher credit. Very much.
And that set me free from the whole credential thing.
Okay.
It set me free because I'm like, the one thing I know is I really get awesome results from my clients. I know I do. And I feel good about it. And then not only do they get a great result, but I learn a lot along the way. And I sometimes think of me and go, well, Wendy Dillard, you don't have enough credentials, but you get results.
It's really interesting because my life experience
about
in terms of credentials has been diametrically the opposite. My life experience where credentials are concerned has been entirely the opposite, because I have not pursued credentials. And I've long thought that it actually, in a way, worked against me that I wasn't going after credentials, because especially when you're trying to get work with somebody else, not when you're trying to work for yourself, although it does affect it. But when you're trying to go get a job somewhere, credentials have become more important than ever. I mean, they're like 25 times more important than when I graduated from high school now. And so as a result, if you don't have the credentials, you're really in kind of a bind if you're trying to go get a job somewhere. And that kind of worked against me for quite some time. But on the other hand, I'm also realizing that a lot of what I was doing, particularly in the first 20 years of my work life, a lot of it, there weren't a lot of credentials for. I mean, much of it had to do with PC and the early Macintoshes and so forth. And I mean, there were no courses at that point. In the 1980s, you couldn't go get, I mean, the best you could get like a degree in something like, you know, computer software or software engineering. You could get that, or you could get a standard electrical engineering degree. But that was about it. You couldn't go take a course in HTML. That didn't come along until well after the year 2000. And by then I'd already been, you know, well, hip deep in the thing. And the marketing courses that you could take, you could become an MBA or something like that. That was certainly available, but it was all offline stuff. And it was all old school stuff. None of it was really preparing you for what was coming in the coming computer age, which was what the 80s was. It was like the 80s were the preparation for the computer age, and you could actually see it coming. There was no preparation in school for that. So I don't even know what credentials I should have gone after.
Well, you know, it's kind of ironic because for someone like me who thought credentials were so important, I have to tell you, when I hire any kind of person like to repair something, whether it's a plumber or electrician or a web designer, I absolutely don't want to hear about their credentials.
Mm.
I just want to see the proof of their work or great referrals.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm really all about, I want to see what you can do. I don't care where you went to school, because what I've learned within my lifetime is I've known a lot of people with some really fabulous sounding degrees and credentials, but I didn't really think that the work they turned out, that their performance of how they executed it, even merited that they should have or could have had that degree.
Yeah, I can see your point. The funny thing is, it can also work the other way. I mean, like I was talking about, I used to do web work, and you talked about how if you were hiring a web designer, one of the big problems about being a web designer when you're showing your work to somebody else is that it very rarely represents what you're capable of doing. And I say that because web work in particular, websites, are so extremely individualized to the person that you're building it for. And every single one of them has different tastes, different preferences, different priorities, different things they're trying to do. And the net result is you very often end up creating stuff that from your own aesthetic capabilities, you have to hold your nose to do the work.
I do understand.
I mean, sometimes you just do something for a client because, well, this is the way they want it done, and they've shown you an example of another website, and you cringe inside, like, oh, God, please don't tell me I have to make it like that one. So even then, I'm not sure I'd even – I've gone through the process of hiring web designers to subcontract stuff out, and it drives me nuts looking at their portfolios because I realize the portfolios tell me absolutely nothing about them. Unless they show me a portfolio where all the websites look the same, then I know it's all about them. And then I don't want them anyway because they don't know how to do anything else. Because I'm dealing with clients that have all different interests and different needs and different perspectives. I have to be able to satisfy that. At least that's what I used to have to do. I don't do it so much anymore. But when I was doing it, that's what I had to deal with. The last thing I wanted was somebody who kept cookie-cutting websites. That wouldn't work.
Right.
So. Yeah, you know what the best way to hire a web designer is? I know it sounds crazy to say this. You hire them to do a website. And you give them the directions. Here's the way I want you to do it. And then you see what he turns out. And now you have a gauge. Okay, here's what I was giving him. Here's what he produced. Here's where the differences are. Now I know what kind of a web designer he is.
Right. The problem with that is you've already spent $5,000 to $8,000, you know, on a decent web designer and go, oh, well, he wasn't really the one I wanted.
Well, it's not something the average person can do, but the way I would do it is I wouldn't give the entire website. I'd give a page because a page is cheaper. You know, so give them one page to do.
I have one even better.
Okay.
I think better. Because I have incredibly high standards in terms of the kind of people I am hire for whatever it is that I want to hire, I no longer look at their credential list, and even though I will listen to a referral or, like, online, I read lots of reviews, I really trust my inner being guide me. That is my absolute fail-safe, but it's not as a last resort. It has become my number one criteria.
Wow, very good.
Because I can look at all the credentials and all the different, you know, business cases and displays of portfolio and feel really convinced, wow, this person is really good. And if I feel a gut instinct that says, don't do it, I won't hire them. Now, back in the day, how I learned how much I can trust my inner being is because I'd get the gut feeling, don't do it, and I'd go against that, and I'd hire the person that I thought was going to be fabulous based on all the things that I saw and heard, and it ended up being a horrible experience.
This is interesting, because we originally set out, if you'll remember, to do this particular episode about 5 trends business leaders don't follow, and we really haven't touched on this, but here's the thing. We're starting to name them. You just named the first one. The first trend that business leaders don't follow is they don't follow their gut. They don't listen to their gut. They always try to match some sort of set of standards, some set of credentials, something you can type on a page. That's the way that they hire. And how often does that work out badly? I've never seen statistics on it, but if it worked out well more than 60% of the time, I'd be surprised.
Well, you know, that brings me to an interesting point. One of the cool things at my job, my day job, is that my boss wants me to be part of our panel interviews when we're hiring.
Okay.
And in our company, it is not an easy way to get hired. You go through like 4 or 5 individual interviews. And then if you pass all that, then you come into a panel interview where there's like 10 people that are, you know, like paying attention to the interview, and we all have get to weigh in and determine whether you're going to come to work for our company or not.
Uh-huh.
And so it's been a fascinating process. And first of all, because I'm an executive admin, I don't know the industry knowledge like everybody else who's taking part in this interview. And so the questions that I ask and my perspective is a little bit different, but sometimes I really don't know if this is really going to be someone great for our company or not based on all the criteria, because I don't do what they do.
Right.
But I do listen to my gut. And while the interview is going on, sometimes I just get a really deep, I get a big solid hunch one way or another of how this person would work overall or not. And it's really interesting to listen to my coworkers kind of talking from both sides. They'll say, well, this person answered these questions really well. And sometimes I hear a coworker saying, I'm just not feeling it. And I'm like, ooh, that person's going with their gut too. This is kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm actually hearing, at least from my little corner of the world, that there's a little bit more of a little bit more intuitive guidance is going on, even if my coworkers aren't calling it that. They're still sensing it, and I'm cueing in and listening for the words that they use that will help me know, are they really tuning into their gut, or are they just using their head?
Well, I think we've just identified the second trend that business leaders should follow that they're often not following, which is let your employees have their gut give you guidance on who to hire and follow that gut as well.
Son of a gun. See, we are following the topic of the day. We just didn't say it out loud.
We're doing it backwards. We're doing it like the person in the test group there. We're doing it backwards.
And we're still going to get the same result.
And by the way, I can also reinforce that second point. We talked about credentials, and I told you how I wasn't really crazy about credentials. I wasn't going to tell this story before, but now I can see how it fits in beautifully. The last job that I had before I went out on my own was with a mid-sized insurance company in Connecticut. And anyone who knows Connecticut knows, you know, for the longest time, this was the insurance capital of the country. Not so much anymore, but there's still quite a bit of insurance companies here with their headquarters here. And this was one of the companies, and I was working in the IT department. And in that department, there was, you know, a lot of, it was all divided up into subsections. So there was like the servers section, and then there was, there was the Windows servers, and then there were the Novell servers, and then there was the network infrastructure guys, and then there were the Linux guys and the database guys. I mean, so it was all broken up like that. And within our team, we worked on the Windows servers. Within our team, we were hiring for a new person. One of our guys had left, and we were going to replace that person. And so my boss came to me one day and said, we have a candidate to fill that position. I was wondering, we've put her through a few interview processes. Would you be willing to interview her? I said, sure, yeah, why not? Now, what's really interesting about this, Wendy, is like I said, I had no credentials coming in. My credentials were I knew how to do the job, and I had proof that I knew how to do the job, but I had no degrees. I had no letters after my name that said I knew how to do this stuff. I had learned it all, you know, just by going out and doing it for a long time. So I didn't have the usual paper that you showed. The candidate I interviewed had no less than 8 certifications on Windows servers. And to the best of my knowledge, there were only 8 available. So she had all of them. She had every certification that at that time was available. There are probably a lot more now. Now, this is like, 17 years ago. So, it's been a while. But the point is, she had everything that you could possibly get at that point in time on Windows servers. So I sit down and I'm interviewing her, and the various topics that those certifications cover, I actually knew probably 6 out of 8, something like that. And the other 2, I had like a semi understanding of. So I figured, well, I'll just go through her certifications. You know, tell me what you've learned, tell me what you did and so forth. And I just started asking those kinds of questions, and the answers that came back were really general, very vague, and sounded like they could have come out of a Microsoft ad.
Wow.
So I thought about it for a minute, and I decided to take one of them, which was a technology that at the time was called Terminal Server. It's kind of similar to it's kind of similar to what we do here with this broadcast, where people are sharing resources on the speaker system. Well, with that particular technology, there were a number of things you needed to know. And so I started quizzing her about Terminal Service. I said, well, tell me about what you studied with Terminal Service. Because she was right out of college, so she'd taken all these courses, and she, had gotten all these certifications and had her degree and all that kind of stuff. She couldn't tell me anything about Terminal Service. I mean, Wendy, she couldn't tell me anything about them. I asked her to define what a terminal server was. She couldn't tell me.
Wow.
And I started going through some of the other certifications. She didn't know anything about them. What she had learned to do was to take and pass the tests with flying colors.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding. You have got to be kidding. You have 8 certificates and you don't know anything about how they work?
Who knows? They could have even been open book tests.
I have no idea. I never took the certification, so I couldn't tell you.
Wow.
But I was just blown away. Well, the best part comes when I go to report to my boss. My boss's name was Jeff. His boss's name was also Jeff. And the two Jeffs were in my boss Jeff's office. And there was another upper-level manager who was in there. And I poked my head in. I said, I'm done. Let me know when you want me to go over this with you. He said, oh, come on in. Do it right now. So I went in and I told him. And his boss, the upper-level chef, started ranking on me saying, well, why are you being so hard on this person? I mean, what's the point? And I said, well, shouldn't we actually, be bringing somebody in who knows what they're doing, who, they claim that they have this background and they know what it's all about? He says, yeah, but we hired you and you didn't have any of that background. I said, yeah, but I didn't lie about it. I told you, point blank, this is what I have credentials on, this is what I don't. And basically, it's all of it I don't, but I have this real world experience, and here's what I've done within that real world experience. It was all true. And it really was all true. I didn't lie about any of it. And he gave me this cross-eyed look, like the credentials were more important than my real-world work, and why wasn't I giving them enough credence?
Well, and there you've kind of set up the scenario that I feel like I've lived within, which is those that have such a high priority on credentials and those that have a high priority on real-world ability. And to me, they're two different things.
They are.
And I used to have... I have a friend who every time we would talk about something, she'd say, oh, Wendy, oh, my gosh, you would love this person. And she wouldn't tell me about the person or their character. She would tell me about the person's credentials. They wrote this book. They were on this stage. They were on Oprah. They did this and this and this. And I looked at her. I said, very well. I could care less about all that. Tell me who she is, what she stands for, and what she does. And she's like, oh, well, and that part of the conversation was really light. She didn't have a lot of content there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, could care less about the credential in terms of, do I know that this person is actually good at what they say they do? And I love your perspective, because real world ability, to me, in my world, far supersedes credentials. And the only reason I really cared about credentials now in my life was so that I could have what others need. Like, for those that credentials are a big deal, I wanted to be able to say, yes, I have that, because here's what I know. When somebody has a belief system that you need to be credentialized before they hire you, they rarely look up and validate your credentials. They just see you listed on their resume or on your website.
Right.
And as long as you have it, that's good enough for them.
Right.
And so, to me, it's like, if that's what some of my future clients might require in order for me to go through their first filter of, do they have credentials? Okay, I'm willing to provide that. And personally, I'm having fun along the way.
Which is vital.
But that's the reason I'm getting credentials, because I already know I can do the work. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest and most important thing to me. But I know that not everybody is like me.
Wouldn't it be interesting, too, if that became one of the criteria? And I don't even know how you test for it, but one of the criteria has to be you love the work. I don't even know how to test for that. But, I mean, it's clear to me if you don't have a love for what you're doing, you're not going to do it well. I don't care how many credentials you've got.
That's interesting. I wonder if that's part of the HR criteria for hiring.
Well, if it is, it's a first for me. I've never heard of it. I mean, I have heard of things kind of like what your company does, where you have to go through like four or five different hoops. And one of them, like my brother is a software engineer, and he recently went through a hiring process to a company that he ended up leaving and going to another company. But when he got hired by this company, they put him through a battery of what I'll call brain teasers. They're brain teasers along the lines of how would you solve from a high level perspective certain software design problems. And they're mostly like high-end math problems, you know, like calculus level and up kind of problems or higher level statistical problems, that kind of thing. And it was a big challenge for him to go through it. He had to actually kind of get himself back into training because he had many years of experience and then had been out of the industry for a while. So it's not like he didn't know how to do this. He was just out of practice, you know. He hadn't done it in a while. So he had to go do, you know, online exercises to get himself up to speed and so forth. And he passed that test. So there's an example of how a company uses that kind of approach of you know, using puzzles or whatever to find out what it is that the person actually knows. But I can't say I've ever heard of a company anywhere that finds some way to divine in advance how much you love the work. And I don't even know how you would ask that. I mean, there's got to be a way to do it.
Directly. But. Do you love this work?
Yeah, but they're likely to just say yes.
How do you feel about this? Well, and see, I use my gut, you know, my intuitive guidance. Right, is just so right on for me that it's like you can hear in somebody's tone of voice whether they really are telling the truth or not. Now, I will say that's a skill that I've honed, and not everybody has it. Some people just believe whatever people say, regardless of their tone of voice. But there's body language, there's all sorts of markers that'll let you know if a person's not completely congruent with that they really believe what they're actually saying.
That's true. That's actually very true.
And if you just listen to the words that people say, people give away more information about themselves than they realize oftentimes.
True.
Like, for example, I was talking with someone recently, and they were relatively new to the job, and we were just kind of talking about, hey, what brought you here? And this person said, well, I gave up my dream job to come here.
Wow.
And why would you give up your dream job? And the person didn't go into specifics. I almost think I caught that person off guard, and they were like, oh! They started saying other stuff. But what I really heard was, this person needed security, financial security.
Yeah.
And they felt that this job was going to give that to them. But that, to me, if I were the HR manager and I had heard that sentence, I would have gone, I don't feel that this person's going to want to stay very long.
Right.
Because if they gave up their dream job, they're going to constantly be comparing the job that they had that they loved to this where they're not really in love with it, but they get a steady paycheck. Because, you know, well, between you and me, money is nice, but you know what? If you're happy, even if you're making lots of money, it's just, I don't think that's the place for you. It's not the place for me.
I agree. Yeah. Because if you don't love it, like you say, it's going to be much harder to stick it out. Not that you can't. I mean, I stuck out jobs I really just did not enjoy doing at all for quite some time. But that didn't mean that I wanted to stay the rest of my life, and I didn't. I got out. I mean, of all the jobs that I worked for other companies, I think the longest tenure I had was 5.5 years. So I never really stuck for, you know, ages with any of them. And I think it's because I didn't love them.
I got to tell you this silly story. I know we part of our show, because as you and I talked about it, is, you know, we want some education, but we want it to be fun and entertaining. So I got a good entertainment story.
Okay.
Long before I was married, I had been on a blind date. So I guess I was probably in my early 30s. I go on this blind date, and I already knew looking out the window that just from how he dressed, and I'm not a snob, but I could tell he just felt old. He felt like too old for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we go out on the date, we're out to dinner, and we're talking, and to me the conversation is pretty darn dry.
Uh-huh.
But he's asking me about, you know, work, and I ask him about his job, and he's at a big aerospace company here in Texas, and one that makes huge jetliners. I can't remember the company name. Oh, yes, I can, but I don't want to say it out loud.
Very diplomatic of you.
For 10 years. And he was, in our conversation, he was telling me about how disgruntled he was with management and with his coworkers and how he didn't get along with anybody. And I said, doesn't that just make you really unhappy to be there? And he says, yeah. And I'm like, and that's okay for you. And he goes, oh, it doesn't matter, because I'm just going to put in another 10 years, and I'm going to take early retirement.
Whoa.
And I looked at him, and I said, you're willing to endure another 10 years? Because he had made this sound so miserable, and he admitted he's miserable at his job.
Yeah.
And I said, you're willing to put in another 10 years just to get your retirement because it's a good pension package? And he went, oh, yeah. So I had to ask. I said, all right, well, obviously retirement is important to you. So what do you plan on doing with him, with your retirement?
Good question.
And he said, oh, I want to have a house, one on each coast, and I want to go fishing. Now, I'll tell you, that was the most passionate-sounding thing he said all night.
And quite disconnected, too. What do you do with the houses on each coast is the part I'm wondering.
Well, but they were both like near a beach or places of water where you could go fishing.
Ah.
And so I said, fishing, so that's what you love to do? And he said, I love to fish.
Okay.
Now, at this point in the evening, I was kind of getting a sense that he was more attracted to me, and he didn't realize how I was totally not attracted to him.
Yeah, I imagine that's true.
And I kind of was sensing we're coming close to the end, like we're about to get the check, and I need to make it clear this is the end of the road.
Right, yeah.
And so when he says, yes, I love to fish, and he goes, do you love to fish? And this is probably tacky, but I said, not only do I not love to fish, I don't even like to eat fish. And he just stared at me like he did not know what to do with that. But back to my point. That was the funny part. But back
that
to my
funny.
Point, I couldn't believe any human on the planet could value something so much that they were willing to endure 10 more years of misery.
Well, I can't say that I value that approach of his or that I can be sympathetic to it, but I can understand it because that's what our parents did. I mean, mm-hmm. In the 50s and the 60s, you kept your job for life. My dad worked for General Electric for 44 years, his entire work life. Yeah. And
did he like it?
In fairness to my dad, he did like large portions of it, yes, especially the last job he held. He really loved that part. So it wasn't like he was just gritting his teeth until he retired. But nevertheless, that was the trend for the longest time. And it's only in the last 30, 40 years or so that trend has broken up. I mean, today the idea of staying at one company is almost unheard of now. But at that point, it was almost universal. In fact, it was a tragedy if you got laid off from your job because you'd put in all these years at the same company, you know?
Yeah, and boy, that is so changing because I just read an article the other day, you know, validating something I have seen over and over now, which is millennials, for the most part, last about 2 to 2.5 years in a job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they go somewhere. They want to go to where they like what they're doing. It's a good environment. They feel valuable. You know, all the things that I think our generation really wanted,
but
we weren't willing to give up security or we were... You know, we still had some old programming in our head from our parents' generation.
But that fact that it's only a couple of years is really a big indicator from my perspective. Because lots of companies now are doing more along the line of what your company does with the multiple stage interviews and so forth, trying to narrow it down, make sure they're getting just the right person to hire. And look what the result is. The millennials are only staying a couple of years. I mean, if there is a better indication of failure, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I think time will tell. I get the impression that the millennials are setting the stage for something new that we've all been asking for. But I believe that things come swinging one direction, and then the pendulum swings the other direction until it kind of, you know, finds an equilibrium in the middle.
It often does. Yep.
You know, and I think right now the millennials are like swinging the opposite direction from baby boomers. And I think we'll land somewhere in the middle.
It does raise a question. Maybe this is our third point that business leaders should pay attention to. Because I know it's a pet peeve of mine, but I'm beginning to wonder if maybe it isn't part of a larger thing. One thing that has really happened, particularly since the beginning of the dot-com boom, is there is an ongoing tendency to be really focused on two or three factors. First factor, short-term profits. Second factor, cost-cutting, low costs. Third factor, handling, if you have a business that is very customer intensive, handling customers like you're moving cattle through a cattle yard. You know what I mean? You can see where I'm going with this too, I think. I continue to be amazed at how so many companies that are very successful continue to put out products that are subpar, that don't really meet customer needs. They only meet a certain piece of the needs, and because they were able to get market share with that, the companies are, for the most part, satisfied. The most that they're really willing to do is perhaps add more features so they can have more ways to draw customers in the first place. And so far, apparently, there hasn't been enough transition between competitors. One competitor losing customers to another competitor, there hasn't been enough of that happening that companies want to take a look at this. But from my perspective, I think so many companies are really missing the boat by not paying more attention to what I'll call the gut feelings of their customers and to the reactions of their customers. You can call a call center. I mean, I called about the ISP and we told that story early on in the show, but you can call any call center about any company that you're dealing with, and you can look at you can experience it yourself, and you can look at the overall stats that are collected by the stat collectors about how satisfied people are with their call center experiences. And they're really not very good. I mean, you have to really play around with the stats to make it look like your company's providing customer satisfaction, because in reality, when you look at the raw data, it's very, very poor, and yet they aren't putting attention on that. Am I crazy? I think there should be more attention put on that.
Well, you know, in my business, as the business I work at, as well as just all the millions of surveys that I've taken over the last 5 years, I think there's a lot of emphasis on good customer service. But what I don't trust is the data that they're collecting through the surveys.
Yes, I agree.
I'll be honest, sometimes I'm like, I just want to get the validation code, so I'm going to get the $3 off at my favorite restaurant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I want to get through it, and I'm like, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10,
yes.
10. Okay, are we done yet?
Right. To me, you know what the best customer survey is? A single box that says, what do you think? And that's the survey. Open-ended.
Well, you know what, Walt? I'm the kind of person that I so believe in helping others improve, that when it comes to somebody asking, like if I had a really bad experience, I don't have judgment on the company. I just want to tell them about this bad experience, hoping that they will take that to heart and perhaps consider that a reason to make some changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I would welcome your phone call to discuss this further.
Oh,
and
good
I put
one.
My phone number in that text box.
Yes, very good. Because that's the piece that's really missing.
No one has ever called me.
Yeah. Well, that's almost a bit of a downer, which is kind of sad because we're at the end of the hour. So let's finish on a happy note here. The happy note is, wow, we just did an entire show on a topic, and we changed the topic in the middle, and it worked.
I love it. This was, like, really invigorating.
It was great. I mean, I'm sorry that we don't have enough time. Very briefly, how do people reach you?
WendyDillard.com.
And you can subscribe at loatoday.net. And that's really all the time we have for. Wendy, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, let's do this again tomorrow.
Sounds good to me. We'll see you all tomorrow here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.